Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Kyiv claims it has achieved a military breakthrough in Ukraine's east and south. If true, is this enough to change the course of the conflict? And at this point, this seems rather doubtful. However, this so-called breakthrough will surely ensure the conflict continues. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Glenn Deason in Oslo. He's professor at the University of Southeastern Norway, as well as author of the book Russophobia, Propaganda in International Politics. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out in Budapest. Of course, there's a flurry of discussion about what Zelensky claims is a breakthrough in the conflict in the south and the east, as I said in my introduction here. But I think if you start unraveling it, it tells a very different story. And there hasn't been much reaction to how the Russians will react to this news here. Your thoughts, George?
Well, it's clear that the initial offensive that was launched by Ukraine in Kherson was a failure. They sustained very heavy casualties and made no progress. The one in the east, the northeast, around Kharkov, has obviously been more successful, and they have made territorial gains. And you know, one really can't deny that at the moment they are setbacks for the Russian side. They evidently were not prepared for this thrust. I mean, they were obviously preparing for the Kherson, weren't preparing for Kharkov, which again will raise questions about how good their intelligence was. But there's no question that the Russians will respond to this, and they're already responding because they've lost Izium. Izium was strategically important, but more seriously for the Russian side is that they appear to have sort of betrayed the people who had put their trust in them. I mean, after all, the difference between now and 2014 was that the Russians made promises, this time we're not going to leave you, we're not going to abandon you to the returning Ukrainian army, which is, and you know, there are already stories coming out that the Ukrainian army is taking reprisals against anyone who was seen to have collaborated with the Russians. But I do think that Russia will respond, and I think they'll respond by realizing that the concept of the special military operations has to be altered, that this is not, this doesn't suffice. They do need more manpower. They need to really up the ante. They need to put in more hardware, because Ukraine has received a lot of military hardware, very sophisticated hardware from NATO. They've received training from NATO. They're fighting better than they were. And clearly, Russia needs to up the ante. They need to prevail. And that means that they will have to make a much greater commitment than they had originally intended with the special military operations concept.
Glenn, there's a lot of thoughts, obviously, here in Moscow about what's going on with this quote-unquote counteroffensive. But there are some people that say that this is akin to like what the West likes to call, the Anglo-Saxon world likes to call, the Battle of the Bulge, in the Ukrainians or the Germans in this case, where they throw in everything they have. It's a major thrust. Will it achieve a victory? That is hard to define here because it's only one small part of the battlefield. But the cynics will say that this is a very costly PR stunt for Kyiv to show to its patrons in NATO that it can actually do something with the arms that it's received. And I'd like to point out there are many that say a lot of the arms that were used in this counteroffensive were foreign. They weren't Ukrainian. Your thoughts?
Well, it depends what the results of this counteroffensive in Kharkov will produce. I mean, this is still unclear. It's only been a few days in, and well, it could go both ways. So, on one hand, if the Ukrainians made these huge sweeping gains, which were territorial all the way to Izium, which was, as George pointed out, very strategic for Russia. This requires, they need this town to come down to the Donbass from the north. So this is quite significant. But of course, it can play out in two ways. One would be that this would be a painful loss, a strategic territory loss for Russia, and this could put the Russians in a very difficult position. Alternatively, we might see that this is the Ukrainian forces, because they've been stretched too far, given that they made these huge sweeping gains. Keep in mind that a lot of these territories were thinly populated by Russian troops. It was mostly Donbass militias. So it is... So it all depends how Russia will respond to this, and it's still, I don't have a crystal ball how it's going to work. But of course,
none of us do. Okay,
but we can look at what went wrong in Kherson, because the Ukrainian also launched a huge counteroffensive, but this, as George also pointed out correctly, ended up in complete failure. What Russia did there was pull a bit back, and the Ukrainian troops were exposed on open fields, and they were bombarded by artillery, aviation, and you saw thousands of their soldiers being destroyed, and also hundreds of military vehicles being destroyed as well. And then Russia took back the territory, and it ended up to be a very costly affair for the Ukrainians. But the Kharkov offensive is slightly different because, first of all, the geography is different. There's more forests area, which they can hide. Also in Kherson, the Russians were prepared a heavy military. As I mentioned in Kharkov area, it was between Kharkov and Izium, it was very thin. Thinly populated of Russian military forces. So it was a better fundamental for this offensive. So I think it has shook the Russian military. But again, what matters now is how Russia responds. If they're able to crack back into this region where the Ukrainians have poured so many of their troops, their finest, it could be a spectacular failure for the Ukrainians. It could be the battle which breaks them. They threw in their best.
That's why I mentioned the Battle of the Bulge. Okay,
yeah. and that's a possibility. But again, we also have to look at the possible alternative option, which is that they're able to hold these areas and then see this as a strategic victory. So it is hard to say. It's a bit early yet. I think everyone's taken a bit back by how much territory was taken. But this can also be seen as a weakness, because you can't consolidate control of it. And if you can't consolidate, then this strength could very quickly become a weakness. But again, it's all very fresh, so it's hard to say. I guess over the next week, we're going to see how this plays out.
You know, George, one thing that is being played out now, and it's living here in Moscow, I've heard it since February 24th, I'll use an English language idiom. When are we taking the gloves off? This is a catalyst here, because there's been an enormous amount of restraint when it comes to infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, wanting to keep casualties very low. You bring out probably the most important point, disappointing the civilians on the ground, which is very, very key, very, very key. If not the most important issue, actually, because this conflict will come to an end one day, but it's the hearts and minds that's in play right now. So, I mean, some people I know are saying, finally, you know, we have to do this in earnest, okay? The special military operation, at least to date, is not achieving what it was supposed to. Up the game, that's what I'm hearing.
I think so too, because really, the Russians did this, it seemed like it was a very clever maneuver. They attacked with a force that was maybe a third and maybe even less than a third of the size of the defending force, which is unheard of. You know, normally it's supposed to be 5-1 superiority towards the attacking side to have any hope of prevailing. And they had achieved quite a lot during these months. On the other hand, the progress in, you know, they got the entirety of the Luhansk People's Republic. They hadn't made that much progress in Donetsk since July. So that was already a problem. But above all, the problem was that they were occupying quite a lot of territory with minimal forces. And therefore, they were always vulnerable to a counterattack. And once it's become clear that NATO is going all in with Ukraine, I mean, they're just simply sending in everything. I mean, there's just simply no longer any restraint on what they're sending to Ukraine. And Ukraine is also now no longer restraining itself. I mean, it is attacking Crimea. It's carrying out assassinations in Russia. There's going to be more of that, more terrorist acts. So, you know, you really have to think, well, we've done what we could under the special military operations concept, but if we're going to win, then this has to be a proper full out war. And therefore, all the things that you say, you know, maybe attacks on Kiev, attacks on infrastructure, or all the dual use infrastructure, attacking, you know, the entry points of the hardware that NATO is sending in. All of that now has to be considered, because this really isn't working. I mean, this wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
Russia is not supposed to be the victim of a counterattack, particularly in a region that is actually close to the Russian border.
Well, and let's continue with the reactions, Glenn, because we had Lloyd Austin in Germany, you know, basically saying whatever it takes again here. I've seen his reactions. I thought he would be a little bit more ebullient, but he wasn't. But maybe, as we've all said here, it's early days here. But the people that are pro-war, that want this proxy conflict with Russia, they must be sitting pretty right now.
Yeah, well, the key discussion or the debate coming out of the United States has been that initially Biden was a bit apprehensive about sending in too powerful equipment because they were afraid that this would lead to a Russian further escalation. If the American side escalates, Russia will respond in kind. But they said that the lesson, this is what's coming out of the United States, is that the lesson is that Russia didn't do anything, that they were able to bring in more and more powerful weapons, longer range missiles, and Russia hasn't responded. So this is kind of the dilemma for Russia. If it escalates, it can risk a direct confrontation with the United States. However, if it doesn't retaliate, doesn't respond, as the United States, again, from the horse's mouth, says, well, they're not retaliating. There's no reason why we shouldn't send heavier and heavier weapons. So this is, I think you're going to see perhaps a response from Russia now, because also what George Payne pointed out, a lot of the rules and restraints has been let go. And
I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen. We're going to have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the events playing out in Ukraine. Stay.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
The United States has always had a variety of tools to use in its attacks on other countries. Economic sanctions are often just the beginning. Another thing you like to do is place some military pressure on the countries that you're talking about. And there has to be an effort to demonize that country and the leader of that country. We have a responsibility for the whole world. And we need to make rules for the rest of the world. because without us, there will be chaos.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lill. This is the home edition to remind you we're discussing important news. Okay, let's go back to Glenn in Oslo. Right before we went to the break, you were trying to finish up a point. Go right ahead.
Yes, when Russia began this, what it refers to as a special military operation in February, the point was then first to impose its term on Kiev, but then, as we know, the British pushed Zelensky to cancel these negotiations, and then this was a war of attrition. But the special military operation, as they see it, would have been sufficient to gain victory in Ukraine. But the argument now, which I hear in Russia, is that the war has changed because NATO is pushing in everything it has, and now Russia has to go all the way. So fighting this with one hand tied on their back with only 200,000 troops doesn't work. That the argument is now they should do what they should have done in the beginning, which is to declare full war and essentially double this. Just last point. I just got back from this economic forum in Vladivostok, and I spoke to plenty of Russians there as well. And this was the main sentiment, that why hasn't Russia done more? Why are the bridges standing? Why taking so much precautions for the civilian infrastructure? This was a luxury they had in February, but it's not a luxury when NATO's pumping in all this weapons. So there's a lot of resentment towards perhaps the Kremlin being too restrained in their response. Again, this is sending the wrong signals, especially to the Americans, that they can keep doing heavier and heavier weapons because Russia won't retaliating kind. So,
but George, if viewers here of Crosstalk or view the gaggle, the podcast that George and I do, George, you're looking pretty much vindicated right now over the last 6 months of our conversations here. I mean, again, it's time to take the gloves off. As you've already mentioned, attacks on Crimea, assassinations in Moscow. It's time to up the game, and this is a catalyst. There are plenty of people, just as Glenn has pointed out here, that this will be a catalyst to push through before the real cold sets in. And I think they'll be perfectly justified with it. And also, it has to send a message. Our viewers here have to understand: Russia is not just in a military conflict in Ukraine; it is fighting all of NATO right now. Okay, this is what the stakes right now. It's Russia against all of NATO. And I think people need to be reminded of that. Go ahead, George.
What you just said is very important, Peter. It is NATO has thrown everything at Russia. I mean, it sees explicitly a war against Russia. It's using Ukraine as cannon fodder. But there's no question the goal here, NATO wants to crush Russia once and for all. And Russians should realize this. So therefore, whatever the original objectives may have been with the special military operations, with the denazification, demilitarization, and the liberation of the Donetsk and Lugansk, that has changed. It's now essentially, it is an existential war for Russia against NATO. And therefore, Russia cannot afford to lose this, because if it loses this, then it is finished as a great power, as any kind of an actor on the world stage. So therefore, Russia really has no choice. And therefore, whatever the extent of the casualties and the hardships that will come about if it starts escalating and destroying infrastructure, targeting Kiev, targeting any Western personnel who are there in Ukraine, it doesn't matter that much because NATO is coming for you anyway. And it's like you've already got the war with NATO. So you don't have to worry now about, this escalation, that. It's already happened. So you don't have any choice now in the matter. So it has to go all in now, because this way of doing things, it's not working, because there's going to be more and more of these counteroffensives by Ukraine. They're now very confident of themselves. NATO is obviously cock-a-hoop with joy about what it's pulled off. So there's going to be a lot more of this, and Russia cannot afford to be seen to be essentially betraying the people who had put their trust in them.
You know, another, Glenn, another angle of this here is that over the last 10 days or so, there's been an enormous amount of and rumors and probably a lot of misinformation. I'm perfectly willing to accept that about Zelensky's standing. There's talks of a coup against him, replacing him. Even in the Russian speaking world, there's even a list of candidates that could possibly replace him. This offensive here is really important for to have him. It's important to him so he can maintain his position as being the interlocutor of Ukraine to the NATO world. This is a very important event for him.
Well, definitely. So far, given that this offensive appears to be successful so far, this has been very good for him because it stabilized his position at home. In terms of having, as we know, there's some opposition towards him, especially in the military and among some of the right wings. But also there's some apprehensions now in NATO in terms of getting weapons to Ukraine, which is seen to be losing. So this offensive, successful as it has been over the past few days, it has obviously given him more credibility. But again, just on the second point, how Russia will respond kind of depends on which way this is going to go. When I began speaking, I mentioned that it can this could have put a lot of Ukrainian troops in vulnerable position if, through this special military operation, the Russians are able to essentially destroy a lot of these forces and retake the ground. I think we'll go back to this move of progressive advancements for Russia. But if it's not able to do so, then I agree with George what Russia's going to do. They will probably then have to escalate by escalating this into a full war by bringing in much more troops, because I don't think there is no option of loss for Russia in this, and I can appreciate the Ukrainians saying this is an existential fight for them because Ukraine might not exist after this, but it's also it is also an existential threat for Russia, because this is not merely leaving Ukraine and things go back to us before 2014. NATO is advancing here, so it is Russia perceives this, I think rightly so, as being an existential threat. So for this reason, if they're not able to push this back through this format of the special military operation, I don't see any other alternative than Russia going in full war by declaring war on Ukraine. So this, of course, will be a huge escalation and will probably be complemented with other things, such as striking wherever you find Western military personnel in Ukraine, the delivery points of weapons and infrastructure, presidential palace. I don't know. It will be much more aggressive, I think. So it's and it goes back to this dilemma that it is a dilemma. If the other side escalates, if you do nothing, as the Americans are so clearly communicating, they see Russia then as being weak, and there's no risk. There's no response. In other words, let's continue more heavy weapons until we see an unfavorable response from Russia. So this is the dilemma that Russia is currently in.
Yeah, and George, the dilemma exists equally for NATO, because NATO is all in on this. They have to win. Their credibility is on the line. Their even legitimacy, I would say, considering with every passing day the pain that Europeans are experiencing because of the sanctions, the energy crisis, and whatnot. I mean, this is turning into existential from all sides, depending on how you interpret it. So, and as you've pointed out earlier, Russia can't afford this to happen, and so this is why we're really at a at the Rubicon right now. Something has to give one way or another. And it's going to be, you know, I hate to say, you know, in our day and age, people love to say we need a win-win situation. No, we're in a situation of win or lose. George.
Yeah, I think so. Because so far, it's NATO has been probing and saying, well, how far will Russia go? Well, we'll just go, you know, we'll send these weaponry. Okay, what will Russia do? Okay, Russia didn't do anything. We'll send something even more dangerous, more lethal. Again, Russia doesn't do much. Okay, well, we'll attack Crimea. Okay, Russia doesn't do anything. So they're probing Russia. But now it's up to Russia to do the same to NATO. They can probe Russia. Okay, we're going to go all in and we're going to hit Kiev. We're going to hit any of the Western forces that may be in Ukraine. You know, strike all the roads, railways, whereby this hardware is getting into Ukraine. What's NATO going to do? So far, it's all very easy for NATO. They can send in arms and bleed Ukraine dry, but they themselves have not been prepared to get involved in the war. So you can put it, okay, are you prepared to get involved yourself? Are you ready to get directly involved? I don't think they are, which is why I think that it's worth Russia just probing NATO. Okay, go ahead. See if you're ready to escalate and get into a direct war with us. So I think that's probably the way Russia's going to go.
Glenn, your thoughts on that? That was an excellent answer from George. Your thoughts?
Yes. No, I agree. I think that's the direction we're going. And that's why this is so dangerous, because for everyone, they see this as being an existential threat. The Ukrainians, Russia, but also, as you pointed out, NATO as well. If it loses this, its all credibility is gone. So when you have everyone seeing that they have everything to win or everything to lose, they're willing to escalate and take huge risks. And I think that's the direction that Russia will go now as well. So it's a very dangerous point in time for everyone. And what is there to say? It's I think the war now will escalate very, very quickly and put us on a very dangerous path. So,
yeah, George and Glenn, we have to point out here, going to George here, is that the casualties that the Ukrainians are taking are just enormous, enormous. And there's a lot of criticism within Ukraine itself on how callous and casual the military sends in forces into the line of fire, because the casualty rate's really very high here. And I mean, depending on the sources, it could be 10 to 1, you know, for every 10 Ukrainians, one Russian. So, you know, you can go down the path of these offensives, but they're very, very costly.
They are very costly.
Last 30 seconds to George. Go ahead.
Yeah, they are very costly. But I think what's must be troubling for Russia is that there's been no collapse in morale. And even in the Western stories about these extensive casualties, they report that the soldiers, these wounded soldiers, they can't wait to get back on the front. So Ukraine, unfortunately, is in the grip of this anti-Russian ideology, such deep abiding hatred for Russia that they're just ready to sacrifice, you know, I don't know how many tens of thousands of lives just to fight this war. And, you know, unfortunately, there's too many within NATO countries also in the grip of this hysterical hatred of Russia.
Well, this is where it stands, gentlemen, here. I want to thank my guests in Oslo and Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.